I'm here. Do you got me? Thank you. Hi, everybody. This is Armand Jamil with you, with the Positive Mind, WBAI, 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Positively minded life, a very important thing. Today I was running across an article in Psychology Today, or I ran across an article in Psychology Today, about grudges. Why people hold grudges, what's the new research they've learned about grudges. Do you have any grudges in your life? Is there anybody you're really upset with? Is there anybody you can't let go of it, or you think about them in a grudgy kind of way? That's what we're going over today. We're going to find out what it is that goes on with you and why some people hold grudges and other people don't. Well, one thing we could say for sure is it's based on the severity of the slight. You know, if somebody does something to you, like abuses you as a child, you're likely to hold a grudge a lot longer than if it's just somebody in school who takes, you know, breaks a toy of yours. That makes sense. But research is kind of indicating a lot of other stuff as well. Here's what we've kind of found out. Now, this according to, let me see, the University of Tennessee medical laboratories did some research on blood pressure. People who hold grudges have higher blood pressure, a higher heart rate, higher forehead muscle tension, and higher skin conduction responses than those who do not. Now, let's say they break it into two categories. Grudgers are one person who stays angry over a period of time because of a personal slight or what they perceive as a personal slight. And we'll call the other one forgivers. And I don't like the word forgiving because it's used in a way that's a little too non-considerate of all the dynamics. But we're going to say the word forgiving. You know, it's either you forgive or you hold a grudge. And let's just take those two extremes for now. Illness. It among the sickest people at the Metropolitan Hospital in St. Louis, among the people who were judged to be the sickest, the ones who were the most ill, according to their disease. So let's say a person has a liver condition. The ones who have the worst liver condition have had a life of holding grudges. So there seems to be something about holding a grudge that makes you sick. That's what the evidence is, and I could go on and cite you all the different places. WebMD Medical News in Atlanta, it says, Hope College researchers, it is healthier to not hold a grudge, because what they find is that those who hold a grudge get the sickest. In fact, it's kind of an interesting thing, you know. If you hold a grudge against someone who has hurt you, in a way, you're going to die sooner. It's almost like, you know, if somebody hurt you, they kill you because you hold a grudge. And when you hold a grudge, it becomes toxic, and therefore, they're going to get you. So, I mean, just for the sake of not wanting to give them that power, you wouldn't want to hold a grudge. But no, people do, and there must be other reasons why people hold grudges, and I'm going to unveil a number of other reasons why people benefit by holding grudges. It does something for them, even though it may shorten their lives. When people think about forgiving someone, almost everybody will agree, 94% of all people in a survey in a Gallup poll said that it is important to forgive. But when asked, do you do it, only 49% said, yes, I do. So 98% know that you should, 94% know you should, and that 49% know. Now, Friedrich Nietzsche was very interesting. You know who he was. He was like the guy who walked around and said, life is miserable. Anyway, Friedrich Nietzsche once equated forgiveness with weakness. He said, if you forgive, you're therefore weak. And I think that there is something to that. I think there is something to the fact that when you hold a grudge, you feel powerful. Let's think about it. You hold a grudge, you know, you clamp your jaw, you clamp your fist, you feel nasty things, you have nasty thoughts about people. Let me tell you a story. Young woman I know, young man. Let me see if I can pull up this story for you. Yeah, man, right. He applied when he was younger. He met the dean of a college, and it was a graduate program, and the dean said to him, send me your application. I will take a really strong look at it, and I will make sure that I will give you the best shot possible. I don't guarantee you're going to get in. Well, it was a very important PhD program that would have written the guy's ticket. It was a clinical psych program. He would have been able to sail through if he got into this university, very renowned university, as the dean had promised he would. This is Armand DeMille with you if you just tuned in. So after 3 months, after he sends in his application with a cover letter, after 3 months he doesn't hear from the person, and he gets angry. He didn't get a negative. He didn't get a positive. And he just felt really annoyed with it, so much so that he gave up. He gave up, and he just carried this resentment towards this man. He said, obviously, that man was lying to me. Obviously, he didn't even look at it. Obviously, he didn't care. And he resented him and resented him, and he followed the other man's career, the dean. He kept following him. He looked him up on the internet. And whenever anything good would happen to the dean, he would get so angry. If he was awarded something. But if it was something bad, like this dean lost his daughter in an accident, he felt happy about it. He carried this resentment and carried this resentment until a total of 10 years passed, and he was moving from one space to another, and he discovered the letter he had never mailed. He discovered that he had never sent in the application. So there it was, 10 years of eating his heart out. Over nothing. Over a non-event. Now, non-events are kind of big, so you would say to yourself, well, wait a minute, therefore. I mean, it's just a mistake, right? No, it's not a mistake. There's only one reason why you would eat your heart out like that. There's only one reason why you would sit around with that resentment, and the truth of it is he wasn't ready to go into a PhD program in psychology if this is the way he responded. Because people who carry grudges have no social skills. Get this. This is the other correlation they found at the University of Nevada. They compared people with social skills with people who carry grudges, and they found out the people who carry grudges are usually isolationist and tend to have only a small collection of friends or a lover or a husband or a wife, but they don't have social skills. If you don't have social skills, then you're negativistic. Negative, and if you're negative, then you have to grudge, you have to complain to somebody, and usually you find somebody who, you know, trades off, I'll listen to your complaints if you take care of me in some way, and so this is the way it goes, but you can't have many friends, because friends don't like to hear people with grudges, they don't trust you. So a clear indication is a person who carries a grudge doesn't have social skills. Very interesting, right? Now, if you don't have social skills, how are you going to become a psychologist? So, in effect, he kind of took himself out of the equation by forgetting to mail the letter or by misplacing the letter and then carrying the grudge. He became his pathology. He just lived it out. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. So we're talking about grudges and why some people carry grudges. Why do some people harbor resentments and others do not? Well, one thing is the feeling of power. You see, you feel powerless over certain things in life. A hurricane comes and takes away your home. You get angry about it. You feel bitter about it. You talk about the weather, and you can hold a grudge against the weather. You can hold a grudge against God. You can hold a grudge against Mother Nature. You could say to yourself, I'm unfortunate and the other people are fortunate. You know, you could resent somebody who has got some good things that you don't have. The person who's got the more expensive house. The person who's got the better car. The person who's got the prettier mate. And you could say, oh, I resent them. I resent them. I can't stand it. The definition of a grudge. It's a strong feeling of hostility or ill will against someone over a grievance, or it could be a perceived grievance. And I want to talk about that man who for 10 years carried this perceived grievance. I want to know about your grudges. We're going to be speaking to you a little later about it. How is it that you can't forgive? And what are the other advantages to holding a grudge? So one advantage is, just think about it, you feel powerless, powerful when you really feel powerless. You apply for a job, the boss looks at you, he thinks you're too crazy for the job, he doesn't tell you. He says to you, no, you know, we hired somebody else. And you find out, no, they didn't really hire anybody else, but he didn't want to tell you. He thought you were crazy because he's afraid he'd get sued. Now you get angry at him. I knew another woman, in fact, a woman applied for a job. I said, why did you get fired from your last job? And she said, well, because my grandmother got sick and died, and I went to Puerto Rico because I had to be with the family, and I left my boss a message on the answering machine that I had to go off to be with my family. It was a family emergency. 2 days later, I got back, and he fired me. What a rat. Well, we don't know what took place in between. You know, we don't know if he had tremendous losses as a result of it. He's not right, she's not right, but she carries this resentment, and what she does is she walks around town talking about him. Here's an interesting thing about a grudge. If you look at the author Nando Paluzzi, who wrote this article in Psychology Today, I went to look him up, and I looked at him on the internet, and he's got somebody who hates him. So you get, you know, you can get somebody who hates you can be following you around. Now on the internet, they could have their articles published right up with you. Look up some of the people you know and see if there's some hate mail connected to him. People talking about him. This is a guy who wrote the article about grudges, has somebody who's got such a grudge about him that he plasters it all over the internet. Well, nowadays, that's pretty difficult to deal with because in the past, if somebody doesn't like you, they tell one person. Now they tell everybody. Okay. Maybe it comes with the turf, you know, maybe that's the way it is. So, but there is something about being a person who feels small, and I don't mean small in stature, but I mean small in spirit. A person who feels inadequate, they generally will take on the people who are not going to respond to them. So let's say you hate somebody who is bigger than you are. Let's say you hate somebody who's your boss because they have more money than you. Then in a way, you're like David with Goliath. People perceive you, at first you think, as being strong because you're willing to hate somebody bigger than you. But it always works against you. Because the more you're seen as a grudgeful person, the more people distance from you. So let's talk about why you cannot forgive someone. Well, here's a secret to it. This is in another study. This one was done by... I'm going to have to get back to this citation. Anyway, here's one of the things that they did, they uncovered. You cannot forgive someone until you have fully felt the pain that he or she has caused you. Now, here's an example of it. People who hold grudges tend not to feel pain completely. Well, it makes a lot of sense. They don't feel pain. They feel angry instead, right? That's the way it is. I'm not hurt. I'm angry. I'm not hurt. I'm angry. Well, if you're not angry, then you'd feel the hurt. And you'd feel how deep the hurt is. So let's say someone betrays you. And they betray your trust. They betray some commitment that you had. Either it's a job, a boyfriend, girlfriend. If you stay angry, you'll never feel how much it hurt you. But if you let yourself dip into the pain, If you let yourself go into it, there's a chance of healing it. Now, when I say forgiveness, you don't forgive the other person for their sake. You forgive them for your sake. You want to let them out of your mind. You want to say, okay, let's let this pass. I'm not talking about reconciliation. That's another thing, which I'll address a little later, because forgiveness does not lead to reconciliation unless there's making amends, unless there's somebody saying, admitting they made this mistake with you and they're willing to do something about it. You know, there's an elderly woman, who was in her house, and two young boys are playing in the street with a baseball, and they're hitting a rock or something with a stick, and they hit it, and it goes through a window. And she doesn't know why it happened. Why is this rock coming through my window? She has a fast paranoid thought. She gets really worried. She goes through a lot of changes. She's about 75 years old, and she's not in the best of health. Then there's a knock on her door, and two little boys walk in, and they say, Mrs. Smith, whatever her name was, we're sorry we broke your window. We were playing, and we broke your window. And there she was with her decision. She was so angry and so scared and so resentful and felt so isolated. And here are these two little kids saying, I'm sorry. So what does she do? You know what she did? She said, yes, I forgive you. I forgive you for doing that, but I still have a broken window. And I would like you to take responsibility for gathering the money to help pay for the repair of the window. If you have to ask your parents, ask your parents. So she did two things. She gave them a chance to make amends. It wasn't just, I forgive you. Too often, parents with their children or children with their parents will say, well, forget it. But nothing transpires to really heal the wound. You want to see them heal it. But some of the things that happen, part of the reason why people like to forgive quickly without feeling the pain, so this is what I'm saying, in order to feel it, in order to get over it, you got to feel the pain. You got to let it go down to your kishkas. You know, if a friend of yours, I had a friend once, and I'll never forget, somebody who knew him made a story about something about me. He believed it. He came back. It wasn't true. He came back to me and he said, I can't afford to be your friend. I was deeply hurt by it. Now, I could have tossed it off, but I remember the choice of how hurt I could feel over, well, I'll be bigger than that. I'm not going to feel it. Nobody's that important to me. When you don't feel the pain of a betrayal or something that happens to you, you're still unhappy, you're still carrying it around, it's because you're still denying your unconscious anger and resentment. To even think you've come to terms with what happened, there are still emotions about the event which you've pushed from your awareness. Very often you could be angry about it with the person who did the harm. But then if you hold off letting yourself feel the pain from the person who did the harm, then what happens is it reminds you of all the other times in your life that the very same kind of thing happened to you. So let's say you're somebody who goes out with a... You're going out with a date or you have a husband or a wife who was drinking or betting money on the side. And they were cheating on you and they were not cheating with another person, but they were cheating by hiding the money and losing the family money. And you feel the resentment and you find out about it and you tell them about it and they say, please forgive me, and you forgive them too quickly. Without having gone through the emotions, you're going to find out that there's a lot of stuff about your early childhood that represented the same kind of betrayals that didn't get faced. And for that reason, you wind up holding on to the resentment. You can't forgive. So a common problem with people caught up in unconscious anger at their parents is that they've tried to forgive them too easily. I'm not saying you shouldn't forgive, but sometimes just don't give it up too easily. You know, I mean, some of them just did really poor stuff. Forgiveness is a gift you give to someone else, and it's a gift you give to yourself. It's an act of your own will. And as such, your willingness to forgive your mother, for example, does not depend on whether or not your mother ever acknowledged the harm that caused you. So what you have to do is to say to yourself first, Am I going to forgive? Am I allowed to do this? And remember, forgiveness comes from a feeling of sorrow. You see, first you get down to the sorrow, not sorrow for anything you have done, but sorrow for the very fact that everyone, including yourself, has the same ugly capacity to inflict harms on others, wittingly or unwittingly. Very often you'll find that the sorrow we feel when there's an injustice is because we too are capable of that kind of injustice. Somebody treats you unfairly, ignores you, doesn't notice something about you. You know, sometimes you just look at it and you could have done the same thing. So very often there's a sorrow when someone does something that reminds you of your own capacity to do that. Now, this is where everybody gets stuck, even your siblings, because it's easy enough to see that your mother was hurtful, but to admit that you've done the same thing, you have the same human qualities, that you treat your mate the very same way, is that in some way you're the same person and you do the same thing. So there's the fourth reason why people find it difficult to forgive. To forgive as opposed to hold on to the grudge. And the next part of this program is going to be you and your telephone calls. I want to hear from you. What about your grudges? What are you holding on to? What kind of things do you live with? You know, now it's easy to make them all sound justified. I mean, you could walk around with a grudge to George Bush. And you could let that grudge carry you in such a way that you're miserable all the time. But it's a funny thing. If you're miserable, then you're going to die sooner. So in effect, you were killed. In effect, the very person who you harbor the resentment towards has won over you. So we have to find a way out of this, my friends. Negativity kills us. We know that. It's not like we're making it up. It's not like we've made up the statistic. A negative mind is a mind that has a shorter life than a positive mind. It's just that simple. And if you're carrying a negative mind around, we've got to do something about it because we need you on this planet. We need you to become an active participant in healing what's going on around us and helping each other. We need this. We need your positive energy. We don't need you in a corner just, you know, being a curmudgeon, grumbling all the place. We don't need that. 212-209-2900 is our number here. It's 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Back with you after a short period of having been away, a month of having been doing our fun drive. We did a couple of very special programs during that period. Just while you're calling in, let me give you a schedule of what's upcoming. On this Thursday, you might want to tell people to do this. I suggest you write it down. Pierce Howard, who is the author of The Brain, he's The Brain, right? He is going to be with us, and we're going to talk about memory and some of the dynamics of memory. Don't forget to tune in. Did I ever tell you my memory joke? Memory joke. A man comes to his friend and he says to his friend, "Hey, Sal, I just took this memory course and this course is just fantastic." He says, it's a great memory course. It's helping me a great deal. And Sal says, "What's the name of the course?" He says, "The name of the course. What's the name of that flower that is red and it has thorns and people give it away on Valentine's Day and it used to smell, but it doesn't smell anymore?" And Sal says, "You mean a rose?" He says, "That's it, a rose." "Hey, Rose, what's the name of my memory course?" 212-209-2900. On Thursday, we'll talk about memory. Next Tuesday, Austin Hayes. Now, this is a very interesting person. A psychologist who deals with people who have physical heart problems. And so she is going to talk about both the remedies for the physical condition. If you know of anybody who's got a heart condition, she's going to talk about the psychology of treating the heart condition. And I'm sure grudges is going to be in there. That's next Tuesday, the 7th of November. And then the following Thursday, right after that, Candice Pert. Now, Candice Pert You may know, if you saw the movie What the Bleep, Candace Pert was mentioned in that. Bill Moyers mentioned her and her work. She does, like, the molecules of healing, and she's a pretty fantastic guest. We're going to have her on Thursday at 1 p.m. So be sure to stay tuned. Now, we're going to take one of your calls right now, 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, how are you, sir?
Good. Who is this?
Jerome.
Hello, Jerome.
How you doing? You were saying something interesting about forgiving your parents or talking, you know, and dealing with that. Well, you don't have to discuss it with them. Can you expand upon that
a
little bit?
Well, give me an example of what you want to forgive your parents for. I mean, come on, just let's put it out there so we can be real specific.
Well, that, you know, maybe your father didn't show you a lot of love when you were a young child.
Well, let's say when you were a kid, Jerome, your dad didn't seem to like you, right?
Right.
Did you have a brother?
Yeah, a couple of brothers.
Did he like your other brothers better?
No.
He didn't like anybody.
Well, he liked us, but he didn't really spend a lot of time showing it.
That's pretty miserable growing up as a kid. You know, one would imagine that the deal is if you've got a parent, your parent's going to take care of you and love you. So, of course, you're going to resent it. Of course. Did he do anything harmful? Did he beat
no.
you?
No, but he wasn't nice all the time. But now I'm grown up. He's still alive. We have a pretty decent relationship. But
here's
we never
happens.
Talked about all of that.
Okay, here's what happens, Jerome. You're going to wind up having a parent and not a father. Your father, you never had a father. You never had one. A real father wouldn't have been this way. So you're going to wind up having a parent. You're going to acknowledge. It's like having a father but not having a dad. And the pain of that is the pain you're going to have to go through, which is what I was saying, before you could really forgive him. You see, you never really let yourself feel the pain. Instead, you resented him.
Right.
Once you go through the pain of it, once you let yourself feel the loss, once you realize that you were just a little kid who didn't have a daddy, where all the other kids had daddies, you didn't have a daddy. And you, like a little kid, you just said, yeah, why me? When you're willing to go through that, you could let go of the resentment. And then what you'll wind up with is not a father you love, but a man who you will acknowledge is part of your family, who is part of your blood, and there's some kind of a small distance feeling towards, but it's not going to be the kind of thing, it'll never be very, very strong and very powerful.
Right.
You know?
I
so
do.
So you've got to go through it, Jerome. You're almost there, and I could tell you're almost there. And by the time you let it go, he'll just be like a kindly old guy, but he will never be your daddy.
I understand. Thank you, sir.
I'm glad you do. Well, sad. Sad when you have parents who aren't parents. I know a lot of people who grow up and they have parents and the parents just aren't parents. Not a good thing. Hurts a lot. Well, we're going to take a short break. I'm going to play you some gentle music because we're talking about painful stuff. I'm going to play a very special tune for a very special person. And when we get back, I'm going to take more of your calls. Thank you. All you cello players sitting out there. It's Franz Schubert, number 6 piano trio in E flat major. And it was also the theme to the movie Barry Lyndon. You know, those of you who have ever seen, you ever seen the movie Barry Lyndon? Barry Lyndon, it was quite a movie, quite a period piece. And this was always going on somewhere around in the background, Franz Schubert, number 6 piano trio in E-flat major. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind on the classical music station WBAI. Yes, we are classical. It is WBAI. Yes, we do play music, and certainly we are a station. One of the only stations in the universe like it, now broadcast across the globe through the internet. Got a call from somebody in San Francisco yesterday saying he listens online all the time. Thanks to the internet, Tom Gerby, WBAI, and all the helpers who help us get this across town. You could actually get a show like today, the one about grudges, and if you could think about somebody in your family who holds a grudge against you and you'd like to heal it, maybe you could send them the program. And that's easy enough to do. You go to the website, thepositivemind.com, you click on the radio program, and it says, do you want to send this to somebody? And poof, you push a button, and there it goes. So that takes all place with costing nothing. Zero. And so whenever you hear one of these programs you want to share with a friend, be sure. Go to thepositivemind.com, pull it up, pass it on. Today we are talking about grudges, holding grudges, and we're taking your calls at 212-209-2900. We're talking about holding a grudge and what it's like to keep it in your jaw, to keep it in your claw, all over you. You know, it hurts you more than it does them. It really does. You know that when you hold this thing, even though you don't feel hurt because you feel powerful, because you're angry, the real truth is, there's a pain underneath that you're afraid to feel, which is you gotta let it go. Gotta let it go, friends, because I want you around this planet a lot longer because you, my listening audience, the listening audience of WBAI, are very important people. We're gonna keep peace in this world. And we have to, in order to do that, we have to have an attitude that doesn't kill us. 212-209-2900, let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. We're getting them up. It's just a tiny bit of clicking.
Hello.
Yes, there you are. Hi.
Hi. Hello?
Yes, I'm here and I'm waiting for you to speak.
Okay. Let me turn my radio down.
You have to turn it off completely.
Okay. Now, I'm not talking. I don't know if this is a grudge or not. All I know is that I experienced the sudden death syndrome when I was 6 years old. This was at the beginning of World War II, and my sister, brother, and I were placed in a Catholic orphanage one day. And it was such a horrific experience. We were the only black children in the home that I didn't suppress it. I repressed it. For 18 years.
Makes sense.
Every single fall, I would go into a depression, and I did not know why. Then I started sleeping 22 hours a day.
Mm.
I went into therapy, and thank God I had the best therapist in the world. But when those memories, and I mean, you talk about horrific, I mean, somebody puts you in a corridor, and you're kneeling on a radiator in the cold.
Yeah.
I saw children die there. I almost died twice, once with pneumonia.
All right, wait. Let's not go that far into the detail.
Okay.
Because then we're going to have people get so upset they're going to be focused on that.
Okay.
What you did, I want to know what you did to heal yourself. Yes, we had a horrific condition, especially a black couple of black kids in a 6-year-old Second World War thrown into a Catholic place where they didn't know what they were doing anyway, And they just didn't know anything. I mean, they were so punitive, they figured be punished, spare the rod, and spoil the child. And they could beat the hell out of you. And, of course, you had your spirit beaten out of you.
Well,
so now, why did this happen during the fall? Why do you get depressed during the fall? Because that
that was the day I was supposed to start school. I was supposed to start the first grade.
Wow, combination of two things that happened in the fall. One is called, you know, the seasonal adjustment disorder. That's sad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, seasonal adjustment disorder, and what you're talking about, sudden infant death. It's like the death of your child. You put those together, you know. The sit and the sad, it's like the word inside. You know, it's like inside you there was all this going on that was just like a cloud coming over you. And you did such a brave thing, because when you went into therapy, what you did was you faced the pain. You took off the cover. You said, okay, let's look at this. And you looked at the worms inside and you saw them crawling around. You said, I don't want to face that. And your therapist helped you face it. And now you're relatively free of it.
No, I'm not fairly. I'm a pretty doggone happy person today. Good. My life is more fulfilling than I ever thought possible. But the one thing they had said to me, you know, how they go back and they ask you about your childhood, blah, blah, this, that, and the other. And he looked at me, he said, you must have the emotional constitution of a horse. And that's something that nobody can really explain. Some people fall through the cracks, you know, if they cut a finger. But that says, honey, when you talk about having to experience the pain, you do it and you simply hang in with both hands, with your fingernails, with your toenails, whatever. You hang in there. And it does ease. It does ease. I mean, like my immediate family, my mother and father, they probably put the dysfunctional. But I had no problem with forgiving them. In fact, I couldn't even call it that. Because if you can get past something, then there's really no reason to forgive. Your life is fine. You go on. You accept the fact that they are human. They have frailties, etc. And you put it aside and you go on and live your life.
What's your name?
Huh?
What is your name?
My name is Florence.
Florence, that's pretty amazing stuff. Florence, what happens when you see a nun walking down the street?
I'm going to tell you something very, very funny.
I have a funny feeling you have a story around this.
I had sent my son to Catholic school.
You sent your son to Catholic school?
I sent my son to Catholic school. The school was on the block, so I had hands on every single step of the way. Because what he was going through in the public school was not too hot, you know? So you just have to play certain things by ear. But I'm an atheist today. There's nothing, you know, like if I see the black and white and whatnot, I can kind of look at it pretty abstractly at this point in time. But I am an atheist because I figure if you're going to do all this crap to me under the name of God, well, let me try another route. And the other route seems to have worked very, very well.
Florence, thank you for calling in. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Yes, more religions have removed God from people than almost any other effort, you know, because you kind of look at it and you say, wait a minute, if this is religion, how can there be a God, whatever God is? 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille, Jerome and Florence. Let's take another caller. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. 212-209-2900. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hello.
Turn down your radio.
I got it.
Off.
Yes, I have the radio
off. Of course
off.
You have it off. You're a professional. You know by now.
Yes, I know.
Yeah.
All right, this is Leora, as you know, and I'm turning the radio off, and I just wanted to share, dear Armand, two things. In terms of grudging and angers, there is a biological hormone called cortisol that shoots through your body. Is it very possible, and you wanted your comment quickly, and then another one, is that you become addicted to this hormone, cortisol, like a drug, and it just, you need to feed it. Number two, the person with the parent who didn't have a father or daddy. Isn't it also possible that when you have your own children, you have a wonderful miracle that can happen, that as you work with as you deliver your child and your boy or girl, that you can self-parent yourself through your own child? What do you think about those ideas?
Well, both of those ideas are tremendously important concepts, Leora, because, and they're much bigger than being able to talk about them casually. Yes, I fully agree with you. When you're aggravated, when you get angry, you can get addicted to your own cortisol, your own endorphins, your own negative emotions, and you just live by it. Because what happens when you don't have it? When you don't have it, you feel vulnerable. So you get addicted to feeling the power of the cortisol, number one. Number two, we are offered an opportunity to change it by being parents or grandparents. You know, whatever it is, you have a chance to change that field. You, in effect, even as a parent or a grandparent, you reparent yourself when you treat a baby beautifully, you know, and properly. So I thank you. I think, you know, once again, your wisdom is right on top. Thanks for calling in. 212-209-2900. Let me take another caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. Love your show.
Thank you.
I can't believe I got through.
You did. Here it is.
I know. I have, like, two situations. I live in the Bronx. I used to live out in Long Island. And I find myself having a hard time just forgiving the people that I live around, because the people that I live around, I find it to be, just really abrupt. And I've had all kinds of things happen to me. People broke into my apartment and damaged my car, and I had somebody pee out the window of a building at me. And
why do you live there?
Because I met my wife, and we got married, and we're looking for a house now. But, I'm a Christian. I'm always praying for God to tell me to forgive the people in that whole...
Yeah, no, I understand that. You know, I forgot exactly how this went, but it was one of the philosophical conundrums. You walk down the street, you fall in a hole.
You know, they're taking advantage of the welfare system and stuff like that. I feel paranoid. Like, if I buy a DVD player or something, that people are watching me, as I'm going to my apartment and stuff, you know. And I'm not used to, you know, living where I have to be, you know. I don't know if I'm just being too sensitive or whatever, but I have a tough time, you know, forgiving people for, you know, behaving that way.
It's very hard to step into this. So what I want you to do is I want you to try to do something different now. I want you to step into their role. You know, we're talking, what's your name, by the way?
Fred.
Fred, we're talking to Fred, who talks about having neighbors. We have an emergency test just now. Who has neighbors who are hostile towards him. Now I want you to step in the shoes. Pick one of those neighbors. Which one of them do you have the most trouble with?
I would say the guy that stole from us downstairs.
The guy who stole from you downstairs. I want you to enter his mind for a minute. I want you to be him. Now be him and talk to me. I want you to talk to me about Fred.
I always see this guy. He seems to go to church a lot. He's always going out with his family and stuff, and he's always smiling and laughing and stuff. But I don't know what he's so happy about, you know. But I guess he must be happy about something.
And so, why do you want to hurt him?
I guess it bothers me that he's happy. I'm always jealous. Like, I don't know, like, what is he doing that's making him so happy?
Well, did Fred ever talk to you?
No, I don't even know the guy.
How come Fred hasn't spoken to you? If Fred thinks that you don't like him, would you like to talk to Fred just to talk to him and find out what he's so happy about?
I guess I might like to, but I don't like even know how I would even relate to him.
No. I understand. Okay, switch back, Fred. Switch back the roles. You mean this man who you think is hostile toward you, who's stolen from you, who's your neighbor downstairs, who resents you, you've never talked to him? You've never sat down with him and say, hey, let's have a cup of coffee, I want to talk to you?
No, because whenever I see him, he's hanging out with guys out in front of the building or something,
Well, that can't be the only time. Do you know what I mean?
I've seen him maybe one other time, like crossing the street when I was with my wife, and I saw him, and she goes, "Oh, they, you know, that's that guy that I told you about." And this is before.
Yeah. Now, so here's what happens: you and your wife form a little group, and now the two of you kind of huddle together. You know, you're like two people who are two Amish people in some kind of a modern town. And the two of you are together, and you're saying, "Ooh, look, there's that guy." So you have your wife bake him a bread, make him a cake, cook him a cookie, and you become bigger than him. What you see is that he's got to live with the misery of his negativity, and you don't have to do anything at all. But if you leave a box of cookies and say, you know, we were making this for the neighbors and we thought we'd make it for you. Or it's Thanksgiving and we were preparing some food and since we see you all the time, here it is.
Right.
And if you take the high road, you might find, just like he was saying now, he might want to share some of that happiness with you. He doesn't have to come all the way in your house and you may not trust him.
Yeah,
but what you do is you take the high road with these people because, you know, somebody who's miserable is so easy to deal with if you don't respond to the misery with your own misery.
Hmm. Wow. It's funny. Like, I'm like on the other side, you know, with this forgiveness thing and then.
Well, even if you don't forgive, you know what I mean?
No, I see what you're saying. I think that would really help me, and I think it would help both of us, actually.
Sure, bake him a bread. Make him a cake. Cook him a cookie. Make him some cookies. Tell your wife to say, or you, make some cookies and say, "Here, we were making these and we're giving them out to the neighbors. And here's some for you." And then what you wind up doing is you wind up joining the neighborhood. You wind up being a part of it instead of being so separate. That's assuming
right.
that you and your wife don't have an investment in being separate, which very often people have.
No, I don't really want to be separate. It's just that, you know, just the circumstances, you know, different things have happened. I didn't really intend for those things to happen. You
Good.
Know?
Okay. Okay, but, so maybe you'll be able to get a discussion going. Each one of us, you included, we are the powers. We are the ones who are going to cure what's around us. And we're going to cure it with our own heart. We're going to cure it by being bigger than just responding. You know, we're going to be larger than what's out there. And if there's resentment and negativity, we'll be bigger than that.
Right.
And that's what you know.
Can I ask you something?
Sure.
I have my older brother, he's been kind of, well, for a while now, since I've gotten married, even before then, he's been, lashing out at me. He's single, he's like 50-something years old, and he lives with my mother. But like anything that I try to do for him, he ends up calling up, and he says, he's my brother, but he says the most abusive things to me. So, you know, you're a moron, you have no life, you know, he does all kinds of, like, you know, hurtful things.
So he sounds just like the neighbor downstairs.
Right, except it's my brother, which
I know. But it's, you see, this is the thing. Sometimes what we do is we avoid dealing with something because to a lot of people listening to the program, they'll hear you say, "I've got this problem with this neighbor downstairs, but I never spoke to him." But part of the reason why you don't heal it with the neighbor downstairs is because the bigger thing to deal with is the pain of your brother's resentment of you. Yes, mm-hmm. There is a way you got to deal with your brother. So you deal with the guy downstairs, and in a way it opens the door for you. And that's what happens to us very often. We carry on a resentment towards somebody who becomes a symbol of a much bigger pain than we have, than, you know, than is with the original person.
Right. It is painful, you know, to me, the family is sacred, and that, you know, I would never do anything, you know, to someone in my family. I would never harm them.
Yeah, your poor brother, you're going to have to deal with him, too. Deal with the guy downstairs first. You're going to learn some very interesting tools.
Thank you, Armand. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for being on the air with us. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. A reminder about this Thursday, tomorrow, Pierce Howard will be with us talking about memory. And then on Tuesday, we'll have Austin Hayes, who will talk about the physical heart and the psychological heart. And the following Thursday, Candice Pert will be with us. Some good stuff coming up with you every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. This is Armand DeMille. I'm going to, what am I going to do? If you want a copy of today's program, or if you want to hear it on the internet, go to thepositivemind.com. You'll get all the information you need. Thepositivemind.com. I'll be with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. Chopin.